Pardon my French. Pardon my French. Pardon my French. Pardon my French.
Our expats from all over the French-speaking world are sharing their American adventure with emotion and humor, starting with New York. What did they bring and what made them stay? Dominique de Kock, Tamara Zuboff, and Hassania Kone are questioning them on their new vision of life.
Bonjour. Welcome on Pardon My French. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
Jennifer Safian is our guest today. She's a divorce and family mediator. Moroccan-born, she grew up in Paris, France, and moved to New York with her husband and three children in 1984. And in 1989, she went through a divorce. Jennifer's astrological sign is Libra. In French, the word Libra is balance, which of course is a scale. But balance also means balance as an equilibrium, as in leveling the plane, as in creating a sense of peace around oneself. Peace with compromise, peace with respect for and from the other. Isn't that mediation?
Absolutely.
Bonjour, Jennifer.
Bonjour, Dominique.
Welcome and thanks for being with us. I just want to remind our audience that Tamara Zuboff travels in remote little corners of France, but she will be back in September over the phone. She's still present with us as I will carry on with her soul-searching questionnaire. And Hassania Kone, who's expecting her third child, Abraham, shortly, choose not to take the train today to come to the studio. But if she calls in, you know, she can cover her rubric over the phone. But Hassania, we wish you the very best, and I hope everything is good with you. So, Jennifer, you grew up in Paris. Under what circumstances did your family leave Morocco to come to France?
My parents left Morocco in 1953. I was 3 years old. Because my father felt that to raise children, they would get a better education outside of Morocco. And French schools were the type of education that people had in Morocco, so we went to France. He was an international businessman, so he traveled a lot between the States and Europe. But he felt that to raise a family, Paris would be the best place.
The best place, just for education. Was it a very traditional family structure that you grew up?
Yes, I grew up in a very traditional Sephardic Jewish family, mm-hmm. where the father is definitely the patriarch, and the mothers kind of obey what the father says, and so do the children.
I see. And then you graduated from the Sorbonne with a master's in fine arts and started working in the arts in Paris, mounting exhibitions, acting as a dealer, I guess already mediating between buyers and sellers.
That's right.
At the time.
Yes, since a very young age, I always had this feeling that I was very uncomfortable in chaos. And so even within my family, if there was a conflict, I was always trying to appease one and talk to the other. And as a very young child, I was doing that, not knowing, of course, that this was mediation. But it was part of who I was.
Right. A real Libra. And then you started to do it in your business, your first area of work, which was art, dealing art. But after being married for 12 years and having three children, your husband was offered a job with a financial firm here in New York City.
That's right.
And as many families going through this experience do, you stopped your work, you as the wife, packed up the family, and in 1984, you moved to New York City. So the transition was a big adjustment for all, for your children.
The transition was very hard. It was in the middle of the school year. It was in March. My two daughters were 7 and 8. We put them at the French Lycée for the third term of the school year. I had a newborn baby. It was pretty hectic. It's pretty hectic.
And nevertheless, you started building your own business, still in the arts?
By the fall of 84, I was thinking about the fact that I wanted to go back into some kind of work connected with the arts. Of course, I had a newborn baby, and I had two girls, and I had a husband who was starting his new job. So I came up with a thought that since I had a lot of French clients, I would find French artworks for them in the States that I could bring back to Europe and sell to them in Europe.
Recuperating.
And that's what I did. I mean, there were a lot of works by French artists that were sold here in the 40s and 50s. And so I started doing that.
Could you give a couple of names of those artists? I'm just curious.
Well, my specialty was French abstract artists like Nicolas de Staël, Serge Polyakov, Bissière, Vieira da Silva. Mm-hmm. They're not so well known here, but among a certain category of traditional collectors, they were. And so I just went out. I remember carrying my baby in the Bjorn and going into galleries and speaking to dealers and telling them who I was and what I was looking to do. I had a wonderful reception. I was amazed how Americans were so welcoming to a foreigner walking off from the street with a baby and talking about, you know, hi, I have clients in New York and I'd like to find some artworks for them.
Right, well, that was
pretty amazing.
That was one of my questions. What was your first feeling in New York? I mean,
it was extraordinary. That to be accepted, the doors were open. I was bringing them business, so they were very happy, and they gave me the opportunity to do it.
And was the city, I mean, the grandiosity of the city a shock for you? Even though you are coming from Paris, which is a big city, it can still either create a sense of marvel or a sense of shock, maybe.
It wasn't really. I had been here several times before, so I was familiar with the city. I didn't find it as beautiful as Paris, although some parts of New York are very extraordinarily beautiful in their own way. And the pace, of course, was much more hectic. That was a little bit hard for me to adjust, but I did. Mm-hmm. I had to. There was no choice. Mm-hmm. I had to, and I had a family, and I had to be there for them.
Right. So you had a little bit of a hard time to adapt. Which parts of New York do you like? I might as well ask the question.
I mean, I always lived on the Upper East Side. That was kind of traditionally where it was appropriate to go, and the kids were going to go to private schools in that area. So that's where we lived then, and I still live in that area. But I love going to Central Park. I love going downtown. I mean, there are lots of areas that I love. And now Brooklyn has become wonderful. I love to go take walks over there, which I would never have thought of in those days. But now it's so gentrified and beautiful.
Right, because New York in 84 was very different than what it is now.
Very different.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. In 89, you went through a divorce, and your entire family remained in New York. Eventually, your life's stabilized. But let's go back to that time, if you don't mind. I think it was a particularly difficult divorce, was it?
It was difficult. Well, no divorce is easy, but it was difficult. I was a transplant. I was an expat. My close friends were back in Europe. Even though I was here 5 years, it was a big adjustment. New city, new career, you know, working differently, and being unhappy. And I found it very hard. And the whole judicial system here was so scary to me that just the idea of having to go through lawyers and go through a divorce was absolutely petrifying.
So you were dealing with battling lawyers, basically.
Well, I kind of wanted to do it without being too much into a battle, but I was told that I had to hire a lawyer. And my husband wasn't very responsive to getting a divorce, even though he recognized he was miserable too. And the lawyer said to me, well, if he doesn't respond, we're going to have to sue him. And I couldn't believe what I was told. I had to sue the father of my kids, this man that I had lived with for all these years. And that was a big shock to me, and I struggled with that for a long time. And it took a long time to get through the divorce because I did not want to serve in papers.
So did you find a type of mediator?
We did, actually. Somebody we knew who was actually a French lawyer with offices in New York who helped us get through the divorce. It was kind of a mediation scenario. But eventually we each had to have lawyers to prepare the documents and get the divorce done for us. But I just was very, very upset with this whole suing issue.
Whole scheme.
Yes.
Yeah. Thank God you find the strength that made the communication going.
It took a long
going.
Time, but I did, mm-hmm. yes.
So do you think it was your own experience that made you decide to enter the field of family mediation?
Well, when I decided to change careers, I really wanted to go into an area where I could help families in crisis. It wasn't only divorce. It was any types of crisis. I had seen a lot of crisis in families up close and personal, and then my divorce. And so I looked for an area where I could help people in crisis. And I found these courses on divorce mediation, which I immediately signed up for and loved the process. And I apply the mediation process not only to divorce, but I also work with families in crisis, all sorts of different crises.
So you went back to school. That was in 2000.
I did.
Do you think if you had stayed in France, would you have done the same?
Not sure.
Not sure, huh?
Not sure. I think New York gave me a lot of self-confidence, a lot of strength, and gave me opportunities that I maybe wouldn't have had in France.
Also, you met your second husband.
I was remarried by then. I remarried in 1991 to an American New Yorker. And he was very supportive and very encouraging of me starting a new career.
That's wonderful. Now, what you're saying on your website, you say, because of my language skills, I am fluent in Spanish as well as in French and English, and my cultural background, I have the privilege of helping and working with many expats going through similar transition as the ones I went through. So it's really helpful to speak the language, of course, of the...
When one is in crisis and one is going through a lot of emotional trauma, I think going back to your first language is really helpful.
Mm. It's a huge benefit.
And I find that even people who speak fluent English for their work want to speak in their own language when they're going through crisis.
So what do you do when you have a hybrid couple, you know, Franco-American or American? So do you, is the conversation going bilingually or?
It depends.
Or
depends.
Are you paying the translation?
I have a couple where I actually do the translation because now they're stuck in their positions and one is refusing to speak the language of the other, even though they understand everything. But most of the time we kind of mix, we go back and forth. We mix. Mm-hmm.
Do you use the nonviolent communication by Marshall Rosenberg, the training, nonviolent communication?
Yes, I haven't taken that training, but I'm familiar with it.
But you know it. Okay, I was just wondering if you would use it or if it was something that was appealing to you as a strategy.
Well, certainly when I start with clients, the first meeting is about, you know, how are we going to talk to each other? How are we going to communicate with each other and trying to set some limits and some grounds and some make some agreement on how the communication is going to flow.
I see. So those are the premises. Yes. We'll go back to divorce and family mediation after the commercial break.
You're listening to the Talking Alternative Network.
Bonjour, this is Dominique de Kock.
Bonjour, c'est Tamara Zuboff.
Bonjour, c'est Asania Kone.
We are hosting Pardon My French, New York City.
Our guests come from all over the world.
From Mali to New Caledonia, from Paris to Quebec.
French is their common language, yet they all come from different cultures, backgrounds or countries.
And their common desire is to make New York their home.
Listen to them share their stories.
Join us at Pardon My French, New York City every Monday from 1 to 2 p.m.
Are you stuck in your business or career? Trying to take your business to the next level and it keeps hitting a wall? This is Sam Leibowitz, the Conscious Consultant. I will help you get to the root cause of your abundance issues and help move you forward in your life. Call me now and let's create the future you dream of. 212-721-8183. That's 212-721-8183. The Conscious Consultant, helping conscious people be better business people.
You're listening to the Talking Alternative Network.
Mm-hmm. And we're back with Pardon My French, and our guest today is Jennifer Safian. She's a family and divorce mediator. Jennifer says in her own words, "It is my privilege to do the job that I do and bring some calm and reassurance to the couples going through this traumatic time in their lives." What makes a good mediator, Jennifer?
First thing is being a good listener. And talking is not really the most important part. It's listening and trying to help the couples communicate to each other what they're each saying. People talk, they don't listen to each other. So my job is to maybe repeat what one person is saying in my words to help the other person hear it, and then do the same thing with the other party. And I tell people that I ask them to listen. Doesn't mean that they're going to agree necessarily with what the other person is saying, but just to give the chance to the other person to express their needs, and they will have a chance as well.
Which is a way to open your heart, yes, in a sense. But your specialty is to help, namely, I guess, French-speaking and Spanish-speaking expats now in New York going through divorces. They're far from their home country and family moral support. But sometimes it can be helpful to be far from your family. You know, you don't get negative input from the family and maybe the own family agenda type of counseling. You know, you can miss the sarcastic humor or whatever. What do you think?
Well, it's true. Actually, sometimes I have couples that are working with me and they haven't even told their parents yet that they're getting a divorce because they're afraid to tell their families and they're afraid of being judged. And that's a big problem for them. But eventually, you know, they need their support system.
Really?
I think so.
And they need to tell them before le fait accompli.
At some point during the process, sometimes they talk about how they're going to tell their families in the session.
Uh-huh.
We talk about how they're going to tell the children. That's a big part of the work in the session. But sometimes they even talk about what they're going to tell the parents and how they're going to agree with each other about what they're going to tell their families.
Mm-hmm. I think there's a very big difference in mentality, European and American mentality, in a sense that to keep the social image is very important. Do you think, amidst your expats couples, that many of them stayed a long time together despite the misery because of fear of breaking that social image and then be rejected by certain social circles?
I would think so. They don't express it in so many words, but some nuances that they allude to, yes, I would think so. And maybe being here does give them, as you said, a little bit of more freedom.
But doesn't that change their mentality to come here? Are they still as keen about the social image?
They're changed their mentality to come here, but at some point, a lot of them are going to go back. And a lot of the women, especially in the families with young children, I see a lot of women who come here to follow their husbands. The husband has a career, the wife has given up her work, and now she's been here 3 or 4 years, she's raising young children, and she gets a divorce. She wants to go home. She doesn't feel she has a support system here. So there's still that, you know, what's going to happen when I go home? Are my friends going to accept me? Mm-hmm. Although now in Europe, there's a lot of divorces as well. So it's a conflict, but they get through it. If they want the divorce, they have to learn how to deal with the consequences, right?
That is true. It's the social structures are very different.
They are.
Europe versus. So I think you as a mediator have to take that in account.
Yes, and I can understand where they're coming from because I've been through it.
You come from that culture. So
yes,
you know,
and they know that. So I think it's comforting for them to come to work with me. And quite often they call me and they want to work with me because I have that understanding. I have that. I was here as an expat. I got a divorce as an expat. So they feel, you know, we have something in common.
Right. Do many parents stay together because they're afraid of losing the love of their children? Is that one of the major fears?
They stay together often because they don't want to hurt the children. They think that when the children are going to be grown up, or they're going to be going to college, it's going to be easier. And so they wait, and they stay stuck in this very difficult life until the children grow up. Unfortunately, the children are going to suffer from the divorce when they're younger and when they're older. It's just going to be different. But children go to college and the parents get divorced, their whole backbone is falling apart. It's very traumatic for them.
Right.
They left a whole house and they come back and now they have two homes and parents are, that are in separate places.
So it's not easier at all.
I don't think so.
So to postpone it,
the perspective is that it may be easier on the children, but there's some other facts that are not so easy.
Mm-hmm. Here is what you post on your website. In a mediated agreement, you both decide the term and what works best for you and your family, as opposed to a litigated agreement which is imposed on you by a court or a judge. That makes, of course, a lot of sense. But the future divorcees, they still have to go to court, I guess, and they can express to the judge the common agreement they came to?
People who come to mediation do not have to go to court at all. They don't go to court.
Oh.
Once the mediation process is finished, I draft an agreement. There's a lawyer that I work with who will put it into a legal document and file it in the courts for the parties. They never have to go to court. Only if the mediation process doesn't work out do they then hire lawyers and go to court.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe the lawyers can work out their issues before they end up in front of the judge. But the mediation, if the mediation process is successful, they never go to court.
So even the agreements with visit rights and so on, that's...
It's all decided by the parties. They may consult lawyers, they often do, on the side, during the mediation process, or they have a lawyer review the agreement before they sign it. But I'm familiar with the law, so I give them information about what the laws are, and then they decide whatever they want to do.
Okay, so that's a little clearer in my head. Not that I'm going to divorce again. But I think this is time to have our little page of current events. I'm going to obviously take over what Hassania was supposed to do. Let's hope I do as good a job. One of the first points of this discussion, and that was Hassania suggesting it, do women overuse their rights here in the U.S.? They take advantage, as many divorced immigrants from American women are complaining they don't have visit rights for their children if they don't add money to alimony. So they sort of have to pay for their visit rights.
I'm not familiar with those cases.
Okay.
The cases that I work with are very structured in the sense that there are laws about who has to pay child support. Alimony has nothing to do with the child support. Alimony is spousal support. It's what one spouse will give the other spouse to help them continue living. Mm. Child support is regulated by the state. It's a percentage of people's income. And some people try and get out of it and not fulfill their obligations. But... I'm not particularly familiar with the cases.
So you don't think that women stand more for their rights here and then sometimes they overuse it compared to France?
I think they do stand for their rights because they have the backup of the law and the backups of the courts and the backups of society.
So you think in France they don't have the same backups?
I'm not so familiar with how the laws are now these days. I think they've made some progress. I think women are much more able to express what they need and what they want, but still not as much as here.
And in your, right, still not as much as here. In your clients, do you see some expat women that are becoming more affirmative, more determined?
Absolutely, yes.
When they come here, yes.
And I went through that myself. Being here, maybe it's New York, not sure if it's New York versus the rest of the states, but gave me a lot of confidence in myself, allowed me to see that I could do certain things that I didn't think I could do in another country, and made me feel that I could do things. And I think a lot of these women feel the same thing.
Right. Maybe there's more solidarity also.
Certainly.
Yeah. I wanted to also bring up the subject of TV reality. You know, there's a reality show called Couples Therapy.
Unfortunately, yes.
Yeah. Okay. So tell me what you think about those violent sessions there on TV.
I'm not very fond of reality shows. I think that they're, which is a modest word, I think that they're, they paint a picture of society which is so extreme. I think people are kind of voyeurs, I don't know what the word would be in English.
Voyeurism. I don't know how to translate that either.
They like looking into...
It's the same word? Thank you, Sam.
People's private lives and all the dirty stuff that goes on. And I think that they paint a very poor image of, you know, of reality. I'm not really in favor of these shows, but
so it doesn't help anybody.
It sells. People watch the program that they can sell advertisements. I guess you know. Mm-hmm. What can I say?
And another show would be Judge Judy, which is this you know, it's an American arbitration-based reality court show on CBS.
Very opinionated lady.
Yes.
Very opinionated lady.
So can we learn something from those shows?
We learn a little bit from the shows. I mean, she's a bit extreme. I think she likes to be this very opinionated lady. She's very bright and very capable. And she tells people what to do, which is very different from mediation, where we never tell people what to do.
Right.
Right. Mediation, we're neutral. We don't give opinions. And she has the, because of her position on the bench, she has the right to tell people what they need to do. And she certainly uses that right.
But she... I mean, the role of a judge is to listen extremely well to both parties.
That is true.
So that's one of the steps of the mediation, I guess.
That is true.
Yeah. All right. So the last point I wanted to talk about is still, you know, that difference between cultures and mentality, which can be great and which, you know, I mean, there's no judgment on this. It's just a fact. Claire Levinson has posted, she's a journalist, posted an article about sexual harassment, sexism, feminism. And she says in the United States, the man who loves too much women is the one who doesn't respect them. What is your thought on that?
You know, it's an interesting thought because I noticed when I came here and that there was so much about this sexual harassment. In the workplace, women would say that this man sexually harassed her. And, you know, in France, we're used to some flirtation. Actually, women like to be told by another man that she's cute or that she has a nice dress. Women take offense at that. And they immediately start yelling at, you know, being sexually harassed. It was a bit of a shock for me when I discovered that. I'm sure that there are cases where it is sexual harassment, and some men use this to tell women they're going to give them their job or going to give them a raise in their job if they are willing to give them some favors. But I think that it's a little bit extreme here, the way it's treated.
Do you think there's really fear amidst the genres, the genders?
Yes, I do think so. Here, very much a lot of fear.
Okay. All right. So we'll get back after the second commercial break. Thank you.
Talking Alternative Radio, 24 hours a day.
Hi, I'm Austin Marola.
And I'm Sloane Wainwright.
We're the hosts of the new Thursday morning show, The Music
Power Hour.
At 11 a.m.
We're going to have fun.
And shine the light on all aspects of music.
And its limitless healing possibilities.
We're going to invite artists to share their songs and play live.
We'll be listening and talking about great music from yesterday to today.
So you're invited to share in our musical conversation.
Your ears will be delighted with the sound of music.
And our voices. Join Austin.
And Sloane.
Live Thursday at 11 a.m. on talkingalternative.com.
I'm the aptly named host of Tony Martinetti Nonprofit Radio. Big nonprofit ideas for the other 95%. Fundraising, board relations, social media. My guests and I cover everything that small and mid-sized shops struggle with. If you have big dreams and a small budget, you have a home at Tony Martinetti Nonprofit Radio. Fridays, 1 to 2 Eastern, at talkingalternative.com.
Hi, this is Joanna Croats at The Woman's Playbook on talkingalternative.com. Join us every Thursday, 12 noon to 1 p.m. We're talking about the rising she economy and about women entrepreneurs and their growth, their triumphs, and the businesses they run, which is different than the way men run businesses. Every Thursday, 12 to 1 p.m. on talkingalternative.com. It will help you start, run, and grow your business.
Hey, all you crazy listeners. Looking to boost your business? Why not advertise on Talking Alternative with very reasonable rates? Interested? Simply email at info@talkingalternative.com.
Pardon my French. Pardon my French. Pardon my French. Pardon my French.
Our expats from all over the French-speaking world are sharing their American adventure with emotion and humor, starting with New York. What did they bring and what made them stay? Dominique de Kock, Tamara Zuboff, and Hassania Kone are questioning them on their new vision of life.
This was Mon Ami La Rose, performed by Natasha Atlas. The lyrics are by Cécile Collier and the music written by Cécile Collier and Jacques Lacombe, and was performed the first time by French singer Françoise Hardy.
I remember that.
Okay.
It takes me back many, many years. Françoise Hardy was an idol of all of us.
Right. And she performed it in 64 the first time.
Yes.
I was wondering to what version you were the most... sensitive to?
Well, actually, today, as I listen to this version, it kind of connects with me because through my artwork and through dealing with art, we really go across a lot of cultures. And art has no culture, not has no nationality. And this singer who is, I think, from a...
She's Belgian-born, but originally, I mean, her parents are Anglo-Egyptian.
Right.
So she's a hybrid as
so
well.
So all this comes through in her song. And as I was listening to it, I was remembering that I was when I was growing up, my father was a big collector. And he collected not only French art, but art from Africa, from Oceania, from Japan, from Egypt. And I learned to look at art, not even thinking about where is it from, just art for the sake of art. And one of my personal interests in art is art called outsider art, people that are untrained and who have made extraordinary art within very limited circumstances, either institutionalized in psychiatric hospitals or in prisons or in isolated situations. And we don't know what their nationality is, but no matter what they are, the expression of their emotions comes through.
What we call in French art brut.
Exactly right. Art brut.
That was very promoted by Paul Klee at the time.
Buffet. I wrote my thesis in the Sorbonne on art brut.
Oh, really?
That was my preferred subject.
Mm-hmm. Would be interesting to see art brut coming from Africa, for instance. I've never been. Have you been confronted?
No, but, you know, primitive art from Africa, well, it was made with the goal of a cultural art, and a lot of the arts from Africa had a practical use to them, right? But
was functional.
Functional, mm-hmm. That's right. Mm-hmm.
Natasha Atlas, she actually gave herself the task and mission to bring together the Western and Eastern worlds through music, and she got an award in France for that.
That's wonderful. I wish there'd be more of that today.
Yeah, in Victoire de la Musique. And I realize that in France there are more and more hybridization, if that the word exists, which means more mixes of Arab-sounded music with Western or French music and songs. And I guess it's pretty natural because now the population in France is very mixed in with Maghreb population.
Right, but I found here a lot with the Asian population. I find there's a lot of blending with the Americans and the Asian population.
And through what?
Well, the marriages and the people who live together and then they have children and the cultures. I find a lot of that. Even among my Jewish friends, they're suddenly studying Buddhism and they want to be, you know, they say that they're Buddhist when they were raised Jewish. It's a lot of mix of Asian and American.
Mm-hmm. Very wonderful open heart movements, I would say. I think this is the time to carry on with Tamara's questionnaire.
Sure.
Which, as you know, is soul-searching, and we'll try to see how far you became a New Yorker.
And I'm feeling good. Fish in the sea, you know how I feel.
So I'm going to ask the same question that was the question of the whole show so far. Why New York still now?
Why am I in New York still now?
Yeah.
It's a good question, especially that when people ask me if I would go back and live in France, I say no. New York has become my home.
So it's an answer by default? Is that what we should say?
It's just, it's for me, this is home now. And I think that we are all New Yorkers. We come from different places. I mean, there are some people who are born and bred here. But honestly, I feel, I hope I'm accepted as a New Yorker. I feel as much a New Yorker as many other people do. I just love this city, love what it's brought to me, to my children, the opportunities that we had, and the growth that we've all experienced personally in this place.
Could you give me three words that describe you the best as a New Yorker?
Multitasker.
Okay.
Exercise. That is something I never did in France. And sushi?
Sounds good to me. Now, if you could restart your career tomorrow, would your New York experience influence your choice? What would you do? I mean, you already changed your career.
This would be my career. This is my career.
This is your
career. This is my career for this stage of my life. I found it, and I'm staying with it.
Right.
And I'm very lucky that I found it. I feel very blessed.
We're going to start the seven deadly sins questionnaire with starting with laziness. New York, the city that never sleeps. Do you take time to be lazy?
I do, actually. I think it's very important among the hypertension and the rhythm of the city to take time to do nothing. And when I mean nothing, I mean sit down and take a break and maybe peruse a newspaper, maybe listen to some music. I need those downtimes. Maybe it's also a question of being older, that I find that's very helpful to me, but I do take some of
And you
times.
Do that every day? That's part of
I
your
I don't consciously
life
make
hygiene.
An effort to do it at a specific time, but I consciously make an effort to have those breaks. Like when I schedule clients, I don't schedule them back to back. I always leave myself, if I can, a break in between. I have to decompress, let go of one, and be prepared for the next couple.
Pride. With which New York personalities would you identify easily? Donald Trump, J-Lo, Charlie Sheen, Jon Stewart, Lady Gaga, Meryl Streep, Tina Fey. We gave you a big choice there.
Well, I haven't met Meryl Streep, but she's certainly my favorite among this, the group that you mentioned. I find that as a woman, she seems that she's blossomed. She seems comfortable in her skin. She doesn't seem to have had facelifts. No, she seems to me to be really a woman that's come into herself and happy to be that way.
En tant que New-Yorkais, si vous voulez quelque chose, il faut aller le saisir soi-même. Avec cela en tête, croyez-vous que la chance existe? As a New Yorker, if you want something, you go and get it. With that in mind, do you still believe in luck?
I absolutely believe in luck, but I think we have to know when to reach out for it. My second marriage was that for me. This man appeared in my life out of nowhere, and it was just amazing luck, but we took advantage of it.
Gluttony. What is your food weakness?
Unfortunately, sugar. Sweets.
So it can come under every form.
From the cheapest candy that you can buy in the drugstore to the fanciest, most elaborate French dessert. I love them all.
No, so a little nostalgia for French dessert.
Oh, yes. And I bake them too.
Mm-hmm. What scares you the most? Now we come to lust. What scares you the most to when you date a New Yorker? What is like any difference with dating compared to the way you did it in France?
I have very little experience dating. I met my husband 6 months after my divorce. He was the only man that I met. We had a wonderful long marriage. The whole experience of dating for me is quite scary. Whether it's different here or in France, I really don't know.
You cannot compare. All right, then
I'm afraid
greed.
Not. I don't have enough experience.
Okay. Greed, finally. Do you pay with credit card or you always have cash on you?
Some of both. I always have some cash and I have my credit cards. But and I always, if I use my credit card, I make sure I can pay the balance off.
Good, so you're well organized. Anger. Besides your daily New Yorker worries, what gives you insomnia in this world?
If my children are going through a hard time, I worry about them, whether it's in their personal lives or in the work or with their own children. Mm-hmm.
Pretty understandable. What is the personality trait that irritates you most in other New Yorkers?
Greed. The obsession of money and some people who admire others because they've made a lot of money. That for me is very distasteful and very difficult to accept.
All right. And then finally, envy, because before the commercial break, imagine that situation. On one side of the street, you have Bill Gates with a city map completely lost. And on the other side, a nice Belgian tourist as well completely lost. Who are you going to help?
Well, I would go for the Belgian tourists, of course.
All right, you're a New Yorker. You got the score. Thank you. So we get back to this after the commercial break.
You're listening to the Talking Alternative Network.
Have you ever considered consulting a roadmap when you feel you need help getting to your destination? When the normal path seems blocked, a little help can come in handy when choosing an alternate route. Your natal chart is a map of your potentials. It addresses relationships, finance, business, health, and above all, creativity. Current planetary cycles can either support or challenge your objectives. I'm Montgomery Taylor. If you would like to explore the help of a private astrological reading, please contact me at Monty@MontyTaylor.com. That's Monty, M-O-N-T-Y, at MontyTaylor.com.
Are you suffering from aches and pains? Has traditional medicine let you down? Are you tired of taking toxic medications? Then come to the Double Diamond Wellness Center and learn how our natural methods can help you to heal. Call us now at 212-721-8183. That's 212-721-8183. Or find us on the web at www.doublediamondwellness.com. We look forward to serving you.
Talking Alternative Radio, 24 hours a day.
So we're back with Pardon My French, and Pardon My French is going to announce our own choice of cultural events of the week of the Francophonie in New York, and asking our guests to comment on it, if you have any comments. So the first one would be the exhibition of Toulouse-Lautrec at MoMA. It's from July 26, 2014 to March 22, 2015. More than 100 etchings and posters, majorly coming from the museum collection, will tell the life story of Le Peintre de la Belle Époque. So are you very familiar with that work?
I'm very familiar, and I encourage anybody to go and see it, of course.
Yeah. It sort of reminds me the film of Woody Allen. What was it, Midnight? Midnight in Paris?
Yes.
It had little sequences of that, that time. And then today, July 8th, actually just after our show at 2 p.m., Albert Maysles will be in Washington, D.C. to receive the National Medal of Arts from President Obama. Do you know the Maysles? The Maysles, I always say the Maysles. The Maysles Documentary Center in Harlem. Those are two filmmakers, they're brothers. You know, there's a lot of brothers in filmmaking. It's Albert and David. And they made about 30 documentaries that are sort of entering in a category called direct cinema. They're the ones who made A Salesman, the Rolling Stones film, Gimme Shelters, Grey Gardens. You probably saw Grey, yeah. So anyway, he's getting that award. The medal citation reads, Albert Maysles for rethinking and remaking documentary film in America. One of the pioneers of direct cinema. So that's in a ceremony at the White House, and it will be live on the screen at the Maysles Documentary Center. Of course, it's a little late for you now to pack up and go and see it, but you probably will have YouTubes about the event. And it's also, for me, the time to talk about this extraordinary documentary center in Harlem, who shows a lot of documentaries in that kind, direct cinema. And festivals like Congo in Harlem. It's always extremely interesting. They also have after-school programs, really encouraging you to discover that center. Another film festival, which is the African Diaspora Film Festival at Teachers College, Columbia University, Friday, August 1st through Sunday, August 3rd. Do you go a lot to the movie theater?
I love the movies, and I like the foreign movies, of course.
Mm-hmm. So would that be something appealing to you?
Yeah, I may very well go.
Well, let me tell you what they show first. It's called Return to Gorée. And you might know Gorée was the island that today symbolizes the slave trade and stands to honor it. And it's basically following Youssou N'Dour, you know, the Senegalese singer, as he traces the trail left by African slaves and the jazz music their descendants created. So that's definitely something I'm going to see, as I am a Youssou N'Dour fan. And of course you see him playing with Bruce Springsteen and Peter Gabriel.
What a treat.
Yeah. So you know him, right? Yes. Okay, and then now tips and tricks. Hassania usually gives those tips and tricks. I found, thanks to French Morning, you know the website,
Morning?
They always have a very interesting announcement, so I played the copycat with them. They mentioned that you could have des cours gratuits en anglais, so free classes in English for us immigrants and expats from all over the world, this time not only the French-speaking world. So you can find them at any YMCA. You can find them at City University of New York. Of course, you have to Google all that. The New York Public Library, they have the ESOL program, English classes for speakers of other languages. You also find them at the Riverside Language Program. This program is especially designed for refugees and immigrants who basically are not always, how can I say, not always have the right papers. So that is a good address to go. Yeah, there's the Renard Language School, and there's also the Union Settlement Association. Maybe we should redirect you right away to the French Morning announcement concerning all those free classes in English. Okay, so that was that, and we still have a little time to talk, I think.
There is one, if I may add, there's one show that's really important coming to New York, the Matisse exhibition of the découpage, the cutouts. I saw it in London. It's an opportunity to see all these works by Matisse put together in one space, and it's really worthwhile seeing. I'm not sure what date is going to be coming to New York, but it's...
I think that's in October. That's at MoMA in October.
Not to miss.
Not to miss. I agree. It's fabulous. So I still had a couple of questions about your passion, actually. So you're a divorce and family mediator. Have you seen couples after their divorce remaining good friends after they went consulting you and carry on that in their new relationship?
That is the goal. And a lot of them come to me and say, we want to remain friendly. When they have children, certainly they need to continue to interact and learn how to communicate together in the best way. And when they don't have children, they've been connected for many years. So I don't actually see them too much afterwards, but I see them when they leave with an agreement and how the process has allowed them to sometimes start communicating again when the communication was completely closed between them.
Powerful.
They've started communicating again, and they go out for coffee and they talk about things in between the mediation sessions. That, for me, is a huge success.
Does it occur, I wanted to ask, oh yes, you were talking about those hybrid couples. Sometimes the mother would go back to France, bring the children with her because there was no reason for her to stay in New York.
Yes, that's a big problem, as we call that relocation. In a lot of situations when there's young children and the mother has no job here, no family support, she wants to move back to Europe with the children, and the husband has a job here or a business that he started. It's very, very hard on the families. But I help them work out agreements where there's going to be a lot of traveling back and forth. They work out who's going to pay for the trips, who's going to be going to New York, who's going to be going to France, how the children are going to travel back and forth. Those are rough agreements. I had once a couple, the wife was Japanese, the husband was Swiss. They lived here. He worked for the UN. She moved back to Japan with the kids. We had to come up with a plan for them. Very difficult, but we got it done.
Japan, New York, three Japan, times a year.
Japan, New York, and...
not easy.
Not easy. Mm-hmm. But the mediation allows a lot of flexibility and a lot of creativity mm-hmm. in these plans.
Have you ever seen couples getting back together?
I know a couple that actually got back together. I don't know if they're still together, but they came to mediation, they started talking about the divorce, and then it's kind of, they still hadn't finished their road together, so they stopped and they went back.
Uh-huh. So you opened the communication for them.
I think
Sam had a question for you. He said if couple were choosing to divorce in U.S. versus France, they had the choice, let's say, because they're French expats, why would they necessarily choose to divorce here in the U.S.?
Well, actually, I see that they've done the research, and sometimes there's a financial advantage for them to divorce here. But also, I think here they feel more freedom. They feel more, the mediation allows them to do pretty much what they want to do. And maybe if they went back to France, they would be back into their structure and they would have to follow certain obligations. And here they feel it's more their space to do what they want.
I see. Now, Jennifer, is there anything you want to promote? Do you have a project, a special project that you have at heart?
My project is to continue working with families, not only with divorce, but I'm hoping that I can extend my work to marital mediation. And there's a big push now in that direction. It's helping people who are going through difficulties in their marriage come to mediation rather than go to therapy to work through certain concrete issues that they haven't been able to overcome and help them stay together. So that's kind of my next goal.
Wonderful. Have you ever thought to bring together people who don't even know each other and that could get into marriage?
No, but I do a lot of prenuptial agreements. People who are contemplating marriage and who come to talk about how they're going to proceed when they get married, not only on the financials, but on all sorts of other things, raising the children. And
after that, they go to the lawyer to set that up.
We prepare an agreement, and then the lawyer drafts it, and then they sign it.
Okay. Now, could you give on the air your contact info? Because I'm sure people, you know, who are listening to the show and want some help.
Certainly, with my name is Jennifer Safian, S-A-F-I-A-N, and everybody can check my website at www.safianmediation.com. And if they want to reach me by phone, it's 212-472-8626. I offer free consultations to anybody who would like to come and find out about mediation.
That's wonderful. And of course, we're going to post that on our Pardon My French Facebook page. Thank you so much, Jennifer.
Thank you so much for having me.
For being with us.
Thank you.
This was Pardon My French. Thanks for listening to the show. Till our next rendezvous. Goodbye.
You're listening to the Talking Alternative Network.
Are you stuck in your business or career? Trying to take your business to the next level and it keeps hitting a wall? This is Sam Leibowitz, the Conscious Consultant. I will help you get to the root cause of your abundance issues and help move you forward in your life. Call me now and let's create the future you dream of. 212-721-8183. That's 212-721-8183. The Conscious Consultant, helping conscious people be better business people.
Hi, I'm Austin Marola.
And I'm Sloan Wainwright.
We're the hosts of the new Thursday morning show, The Music
Power Hour.
At 11 a.m.
We're going to have fun.
And shine the light on all aspects of music.
And its limitless healing possibilities.
We're going to invite artists to share their songs and play live.
We'll be listening and talking about great music from yesterday to today.
So you're invited to share in our musical conversation.
Your ears will be delighted with the sound of music.
And our voices. Join Austin.
And Sloan.
Live Thursdays at 11 a.m. on TalkingAlternative.com.
You're listening to the Talking Alternative Network at www.talkingalternative.com. Now, broadcasting 24 hours a day. Talking Alternative.
Have you ever considered consulting a roadmap when you feel you need help getting to your destination? When the normal path seems blocked, a little help can come in handy when choosing an alternate route. Your natal chart is a map of your potentials. It addresses relationships, finance, business, health, and above all, creativity. Current planetary cycles can either support or challenge your objectives. I'm Montgomery Taylor. If you would like to explore the help of a private astrological reading, please contact me at Monty@MontyTaylor.com. That's Monty, M-O-N-T-Y, @MontyTaylor.com.
Are you suffering from aches and pains? Has traditional medicine let you down? Are you tired of taking toxic medications? Then come to the Double Diamond Wellness Center and learn how our natural methods can help you to heal. call us now at 212-721-8183. That's 212-721-8183. Or find us on the web at www.doublediamondwellness.com. We look forward to serving you.
TalkingAlternative.com.